Hello, my name's Charlotte Cooper. Welcome to the audio version of a queer and trans fat activist timeline zine. I'm going to describe the zine itself and then read the content of the zine and describe the images in the zine. This is the first time I've ever done an audio zine, and I'm interested in feedback from people listening to this audio version. So I'd love to hear from people who've used it, especially if you have ideas for how I can make audio zines more accessible or better in the future. My email address is mail@charlottecooper.net. Okay, I'm going to get started. So the zine is A5. It's got 34 printed pages. It's got a cover made of card, sort of yellow card. And on the cover it says, a queer and trans fat activist timeline, and my name, Charlotte Cooper. And there are strips of an image of the timeline, so you can see some of the text that people wrote on the timeline when it was created in Oakland in 2010. And if you look closely, you can see some of the things that have been written. I'm not going to read them out because we'll get to read out the content of the timeline later on. Okay, so here's the first page. A queer and trans fat activist timeline. In 2010, I proposed and facilitated a workshop at the No Lose Gathering in Oakland, California, where a timeline was collectively produced. This zine is a product of that workshop, although I hope that it has a life far beyond that particular time and place. This is a zine about a movement, ideas, experiences, a workshop, a conference, zines, histories, places, collective memory, community, critical reflection, cultural imperialism, dialogue, texts, feminism, archives, many things, and stuff I hadn't considered too. It's also about fat people, queer people and trans people, and it's about me and the things I do. Many thanks to all the workshop participants, Bill Vexel, Deb Burgard, ESRC Fat Studies and Health at Every Size seminar participants, Kay Hyatt, Simon Murphy, No Lose, Rebel Bellies, Bill Savage, Villa Magdalena Kay, Cookie Woolner, Alexis Yalon, people who encouraged me, and queer, trans, fat activists everywhere, past, present and future. Charlotte Cooper, April 2011, Hamburg and East London. I neglected to say that the cover of the zine is printed on kind of yellowish coloured card. What's in this zine? 1. An explanation. 2. A zine version of a timeline that was made at a workshop. The original timeline was drawn by many people in coloured pens on a roll of wallpaper. It's very long when unfurled and looks like this. So underneath the text on this page, there's a picture of the timeline unfurled on the floor of my room at the Villa Magdalena Kay. And you can see it kind of shooting off into the distance. It's very long. There's a rug and you can just about make out the floorboards and some sunlight on the floorboards. Who made this scene? My name is Charlotte Cooper. I live in London in the UK and I'm British, though don't feel much attachment to that nationality. I'm queer, from a working class background, white, middle aged, and have a load of higher education. I have poly relationships and I'm sort of femme. I've been a fat activist for over 20 years and consider myself a DIY cultural producer in terms of zine and filmmaking, being in bands, other activities typical of the genre and a few that aren't, such as my gang, the Chubsters. In 2012, I hope to graduate with a PhD in sociology, having produced a thesis about fat activism. I've written a couple of books. The most relevant one for this project is called Fat and Proud, The Politics of Size. I also blog about fat at obesitytimebomb.blogspot.com. Underneath this text, there's another picture. It's a picture of my laptop computer sitting on top of the timeline, which is stretched out on a bed and held in place by two books at either end to prevent it from rolling up. On the right, there's a window. You can see a bit of curtain. This picture was taken when I was digitising the content of the timeline, when I was artist in residence at Villa Magdalena Kay. Why did I make this scene? 1. I like fat activist histories. One of the things that interests me very much about fat activism as a social movement is that it stretches back at least four decades. It may have deeper historical roots from different places, but I'm talking about the documented stuff that is accessible to me as a Western Anglophone. Not many people know about fat activism, and fewer still know about the movement's various histories. This means that as new generations of people get involved with fat activism, they are cut off from what went before and don't have the advantage of learning from the past. It also means that people who did fat activism in the early days of the movement are overlooked when, in my opinion, they should be celebrated and remembered. I see a part of my fat activism as making what are often hidden historical fat activisms explicit and known, and acknowledging the work that came before me, which inspires me greatly. I also see my work as encouraging people to document and archive their fat activism to make their private worlds public. Despite rich histories in different countries, there's currently very little documented material available on fat activism. My hope is that the more fat activists document what we do and share that documentation, the more people engage with it, the more there is to engage with, and the richer and more diverse the movement becomes. 2. I wanted to document fat activist history in a specific time and place. I had the pleasure and privilege of attending No Lose in 2010. This is a vibrant community of fat dykes, bisexual women, transgendered folks and our allies seeking to end the oppression of fat people. No Lose manifests mostly as a sort of annual conference that takes place in various locations in the US, and the 2010 gathering happened in Oakland, California. I knew that some older fat activists would be going, and I thought it would be a good opportunity to get people talking about history and herstory, look it up if you don't know what it means. I also thought it would be interesting and fun for people of all ages at the conference to co-construct a historical document together. I wanted to be clear that we would not be producing a definitive fat activist history. I know that some fat activists have tried to do this, and I consider it an impossible task because no one can create things without a context. Histories are always bound by the time and place in which they were recorded, the person or people who do the recording, and the people who have access to those histories or interpret them. I think history has a lot in common with fiction. There's never going to be a single, neutral, comprehensive, factual version of events. Some people will disagree with me, but this is where I'm coming from. I'm also troubled by the way that some fat activist historians, particularly in the US, presume to speak for people everywhere, even though they ignore or are ignorant of fat activism that happens in other parts of the world. It bothers me that different cultural relationships to fat and activism are unacknowledged or repeated uncritically, such as the truism that fat is okay in other cultures, where that other is rarely articulated and often permeated with racism. I see this as a form of cultural imperialism, where diverse perspectives are misrepresented by people who do not understand their nuances and then reissued and handed back to the originators as fact. This is a misuse of power. Fat activists in the US should create their own histories and engage with histories outside their own experience, but their position in relation to those histories should be acknowledged, and no one's perspective should be presumed to be universal, least of all those coming out of the US. In co-constructing the timeline, I was very careful to reiterate that this is a document produced by a group of about 50 mostly fat lesbians / dykes / bi women and trans people who attended a workshop at No Lose 2010. It also reflects my historical and present-day interests in fat activism. It is not the history of fat activism or an attempt to represent facts. It's more about sometimes fuzzy memory, collaboration and community. 3. I wanted to create cross-cultural critical dialogue about what it is to document fat activism and what it means to construct and interpret fat activist histories. I don't know much about historiography, the study of how histories are put together, but I think the timeline that the group at No Lose co-constructed is a useful object to generate discussions about fat activism amongst people of different backgrounds and to invite thoughts and comments about who makes history and how it can be interpreted. I talk about this in the section about Bildvexel below. As well as the truism, in some cultures fat is okay, I've also come across fat was acceptable in the past. I think this is a Duff historical reading and generally relates to a moment in standard Western art history where a few painters produced pictures of fleshy women. A full discussion of what that means will have to be played out elsewhere. My point is that the past is as multiple and contingent as the present, and I really want to talk about this in relation to how people might look at historical fat activisms. 4. I wanted to document the indispensable and undeniable contributions by fat, queer and trans people to fat activism. From the very earliest fat activism, fat, queer and trans people have been an important presence in the movement. When I say queer, I really mean it as an umbrella for lesbians and dykes and questioning and transgressive women, rather than bears, who have a different political trajectory. I also mean feminists, by and large. A significant part of fat activism has been and continues to be concerned with assimilation, showing just how normal fat people are. Given this trend, I don't want any of the movement's queerness or gender nonconformity to be erased, as I have seen happen to some work made by fat dykes in the UK. The timeline was constructed by queer and trans fat people, and everything it documents is about or affects this group too. 5. I wanted to make a zine. I've published work in many different ways, but self-publishing zines is still one of my favourite means of making my ideas public, not least because it gives me full creative control of what I produce. I've made physically small zines in the past, and now I want to have a go at something chunkier and experiment with making accessible zines, which is why this one is available in audio format too, and as a download. I also wanted to make a zine out of the timeline in order to make it more than just one object, to make it multiple objects that people could have and reflect on and read and share in their own ways. A zine is something that can be archived in many places too. It will never replace the timeline, which has a particular look and feel, but it makes a version of it more accessible to people. Zines are mentioned in the timeline itself as ways in which queer, fat and trans people do activism, which makes it feel like an appropriate medium. Maybe this zine will be mentioned in future timelines. I like the way that zines are ephemeral. It's kind of playing with the idea of history as something permanent. Zines and DIY culture can be elitist, but for me they are the most immediate, cheap and desirable way of putting this project out in the world and reaching people who will most likely understand it. I want to support the practice of autonomous cultural production. It's fun too. Okay, so now we have another picture, which I'm going to try and describe. It's a picture of people actually writing on the timeline at the workshop at No Lose. And there's somebody in the foreground. You can see the back of them. They've got longish curly hair. And there's somebody crouching down in the middle of the picture. And to the left, you can see people's arms, somebody standing and pointing and talking to somebody else. It's quite a fuzzy picture and very sort of indistinct. Okay, on to the next section. What did I do? How did the timeline and zine come together? Here's an explanation of my process. 1. I wrote a workshop proposal and sent it to No Lose. Here's the proposal. The time of our lives, fighting fat panic through fat history, memory and culture. Fat activism, pioneered by fat dykes / lesbians, bisexual women and transgendered folks, has a history that predates fat panic by at least 2 decades. But the current war on obesity means that many of us are disconnected from this amazing body of powerful work. Such histories can transform self-hatred and isolation, encourage activists of today by providing precedents for disrupting fat phobia, and offer clues for creating fat culture. There are currently few published queer and trans fat activist historical accounts, partly because there is little documentation. Sometimes accounts surface but offer tiny fragments without context, which means that diverse histories are unacknowledged and become invisible. In this informal workshop, we want to, there's 3 bullet points, define what we mean when we talk about fat activist history and memory, especially that made by fat dykes, lesbians, bisexual women and transgendered folks. Think about how to record histories, how to make sure the past is not forgotten, how to acknowledge other people when we are doing this. Share some of our historical and cross-cultural community knowledge, bearing in mind that the Bay Area is home to a lot of really rad older fat people who were there right at the beginnings of the movement. During the workshop, we will construct a queer and trans fat activist community timeline and encourage workshop participants and people at No Lose in general to add their histories and memories to it. People can do this by writing directly on the timeline, attaching paper notes to it, emailing the workshop facilitators, or recording stories on a digital voice recorder, which will be available. We welcome all participants and will endeavour to make this activity as inclusive and accessible as possible. Please let us know if you have specific access needs. This timeline will form the basis of a paper zine, which will be distributed free after the event to everyone who attends the workshop and anyone else who lets us know that they would like a copy. An audio and large print version of the zine will be made available. We will also lodge copies of the zine with global archives supporting queer and trans fat activist history. After we have finished making the zine, we will donate the original workshop materials to an archive that we will nominate at the workshop. Nolu's accepted it. I tied it in with Fat Panic because that was the theme of the 2010 conference. I wrote the proposal and conceived the workshop, but I didn't want to facilitate it alone, so I asked my girlfriend Kay Hyatt to co-facilitate with me. She agreed. 2. I co-facilitated the workshop at Nolu's. I didn't count how many people came to the workshop. Some people came and went. Kay and I introduced the workshop themes and then invited people to take a pen and write their memories of fat activist events on the timeline. By timeline, I'm talking about a long strip of plain wallpaper paper that has a line drawn at the bottom of it and dates along that line. We stuck the paper on a long wall at a low enough height so that people using wheelchairs and scooters could reach it to write. The timeline was already populated with a few things I thought were important that Kay wrote on the paper. Her handwriting is neat, mine is not. And which I hoped might jog people's memories and give an idea of the kinds of things I was looking for. I was deliberately vague with my definition of fat activism and encouraged people to write what they thought was significant. It was a beautiful sight seeing people write on the timeline. It was something that lots of people could participate in and create at the same time. Older people were down one end, younger up the other end. It was wonderful to see the sparse, early fat queer activist events become greater in number as time went on, to see the involvement of trans people and to see activists with long-standing involvement with the movement go wild with their pens, writing, sharing and remembering as fast as they could get it down. People talked and remembered at the same time, visiting one spot and then another, asking for clarification. It was like a dialogue between the past and present. It was a statement of memory, of things that matter to people, and it had diverse contributors. It was very moving. At the workshop, I also made 2 recordings of people sharing their stories. I wanted to include them in this zine, but I'm ashamed to say that I think I may have accidentally erased them from my digital recorder because 1 year on, I cannot find the files on my computer. I'm very sorry about this. 3. I took the timeline to other groups for discussion. Whilst I was in the Bay Area, I took the timeline to a meeting of Think Tank, a health at every size group. This was the only time that I invited people outside the workshop to add their thoughts to the timeline. Few did, and I wondered if they fully understood the project or thought it was worthwhile. Some of the people at the think tank also had connections to Nolu's. I showed the timeline to a group of interdisciplinary fat studies scholars in London in November 2010. This was part of a seminar series funded by the UK government called Fat Studies and Health at Every Size. People talked about the timeline format and about how different formats and overlays could be used to reconceptualise the content. Later in November 2010, I took the timeline to a gathering called Rebel Bellies in Berlin. This was a community event looking at queer and trans fat activism. There were films and performances, and I showed the timeline and encouraged a discussion about it. 4. I submitted a proposal to be an artist in residence. I have a busy life, and I didn't know when I would have time to make the zine of the timeline. My friend Coral Short told me about an artist residency in Hamburg at a place called Villa Magdalena K, a peaceful feminist live workspace where you can stay very cheaply. I thought a short residency could give me a bit of time and space to make the zine and reflect on the process of making the timeline. I also thought it would be good to do the work outside a US or British context and in a city where I knew some people and which had already been supportive of my fat activism. In April 2011, I stayed at the villa for just under 3 weeks and put the zine together. 5. I donated the original timeline to Bildwechsel in Hamburg. Build Vexel is a fantastic queer, trans and feminist multimedia archive that has its headquarters in Hamburg. In 2009, Build Vexel sponsored a film show for my fat activist project, The Chubsters, as part of Hamburg's Queer Film Festival. Both Build Vexel and the festival looked after me and the other Chubsters so generously that I vowed I would return someday with a present. This turned out to be the timeline. There were other reasons for choosing to donate the original timeline to Build Vexel. It was important to me to give the timeline to an archive and not to maintain private ownership of it. I wanted more people to have access to it, and by donating the material, make some comment about the public and private in activist lives. I wanted to lodge the timeline in a place where English was spoken, but where it is not people's first language, and in a specific kind of archive where people might understand or appreciate it, and where queer, trans and feminist politics were a given. Part of taking the timeline from the Bay Area to Hamburg was about encouraging people in communities outside the Anglophone US, Canada, Australia and the UK to engage critically with fat activism generated in those places and to encourage dialogue about cultural imperialism within the ways that fat activist knowledge travels around the world. I wanted to critique my own role as a fat activist who moves between countries and who may be an agent of that cultural imperialism. I wanted to show that it isn't enough just to export US, Canadian, UK identity politics, that they don't always fit different contexts, and to encourage people within those other contexts to speak back. I wanted to critique colonial attitudes, particularly within the US. Will this happen? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe the timeline will be used or not used in other ways. I look forward to whatever may come. Luckily, Build Vexel thought all this was a good idea. They are now the owners of the timeline, and you can go and see it there in Hamburg. They may make a website out of the timeline and the zine. It's going to have another life now. 6. I made copies of the zine and sent them to archives, zine libraries, timeline contributors, zine distributors. I spread this thing as far and wide as I could. I sold some copies to pay for printing and posting costs, which I paid for upfront by myself and with some donations from friends. I made an audio version of the zine for visually impaired people and for anyone else who wanted it. I recorded myself reading the content and describing the images. That's what I'm doing right now. I made a PDF of the zine that people could download and share. I looked for help distributing the zine. I made myself available to talk to individuals and groups about the timeline and about the zine, and I wrote a paper about it for an academic journal. What next? The timeline turned into a big piece of work, a multidimensional project, something expansive, but it has many limitations. It names things, but it doesn't tell you much beyond that. Many important things have been omitted for reasons including forgetfulness, arrogance, ignorance, just not being there to tell the story, or other factors. The layout implies a linear progression between events, but reality is more complicated. It's extremely sketchy, muddled, inconsistent. You will probably spot other problems and shortcomings too. Oh well. Nevertheless, here it is, with all its flaws, ready for other people to develop. How could other people use this idea? Maybe make their own timelines? Find other ways of documenting queer and trans fat activist histories and cultures? Develop different models of showing these stories? Do oral histories? Make more work about this particular timeline and zine? Paint a picture of it? Sing a song about it? Make a zine about what it was like to read this zine or visit the timeline at Build Vexel? There are countless ways in which the timeline could be used creatively and politically. It's strange to be letting go of the timeline now. It's been part of my life for almost a year, and I feel a close attachment to the text and people's handwriting. Many of its contributors are my friends. It represents to me an enthusiastic collected voice and evidence of diverse memory. I enjoy reading into the texts, wondering why one person put a trademark symbol on one of the initiatives, spotting the egos, thinking about who did and didn't contribute at the workshop, what was missed, what was recorded incorrectly. Loving it where people have clarified original statements. Someone took it on themselves to scrawl an odd little poem about Fatlandia / No Lose at the end of the timeline, which irritated me at first, but I've come to appreciate its lunacy. It's included at the back of the zine. I hope that people don't hold back, that folks engage with the ideas I have presented here, own, modify and expand them, mix them up. I want to see many, many accounts of queer and trans fat activism, stories that are full of inspiring beauty, politics, power. I think they deserve to be known and shared. Contact. If you want to talk about any of this stuff, have ideas for projects based on the timeline, want to send a donation, want a copy in audio format, want to read things I've written, or just want to speak to a real life fat activist, you can contact me, Charlotte Cooper, at mail, M-A-I-L, at charlottecooper.net. I'll spell that out. charlottecooper.net for the foreseeable future. Beyond that, just search. Hopefully you will find me. Get in touch with Build Vexel if you want to visit and look at and play with the timeline. Get in touch with them anyway, especially if you can donate some cash. They're a great resource. Their address, Build Vexel. I can't pronounce this in German, but it's Kirchenallee, I think, which is spelled K-I-R-C-H-E-N-A-L-L-E-E, 25. Next line, 20099 Hamburg, Germany. Telephone, +49 40 246 384. Email, info@buildvexel.org. That's buildvexel.org. And the website is buildvexel.org. See also charlottecooper.net, my ancient websites. Chubstergang.com, the Chubsters online home. http://tinyurl.com/ESRCFAT. This is the website for the Economic and Social Research Council's Fat Studies and Health at Every Size seminar series in the UK, where the timeline was shown and discussed in November 2010. Kinkzine.blogspot.com, which is my other blog. Nolose.org, the organisation where the original timeline was co-constructed. That's NOLOSE.org. obesitytimebomb.blogspot.com, which is my fat activist blog, and villamagdalenak.de, which is the place where I made this scene. I'll spell that out, villamagdalenak.de. Here's a page of some other related things I've written. I'll just read it out very briefly. Cooper C., Fat Studies, Mapping the Field, which is in Sociology Compass, number 4, Volume 4, number 12, and this was published in 2010. Cooper C., 2010, Olympics, Living in the Shadow of the Beast, online, third space, volume 9, number 2. Cooper C., 2010, Fat is a Feminist Issue, But Whose Feminism?, which is published in The Scavenger. And then there's a URL available, www.thescavenger.net/feminism. Popculture/ Fat is a Feminist Issue, But Whose Feminism? 90645.html. Another one, Cooper C. Maybe It Should Be Called Fat American Studies, in Rothblum E. and Solovey S., The Fat Studies Reader, New York University Press. Cooper C. 2009, Fat Activism in 10 Astonishing, Beguiling, Inspiring and Beautiful Episodes, in Tomilly C. and Koloski Naylor A., Fat Studies in the UK, York, Raw Nerve Books. Cooper C., Hyatt K., Murphy S., Savage B., 2008, Big Bums, which was a zine. Cooper C., 1998, Fat and Proud, The Politics of Size, London, The Women's Press. Cooper C., 1998, Charlotte Cooper, aged 18, in Cole C., Between You and Me, Real Life Diaries and Letters by Women Writers, London, The Women's Press. Cooper C., 1997, Can a Fat Woman Call Herself Disabled? Disability in Society, Volume 12, Number 1, available in translation as Darf sich eine übergewichtige Frau behindert nennen? In Weiser J., ARC, in Disability Studies, Ein Lesbuch, in Switzerland. Last thing I've written, Cooper C., 1996, Fitting, in Bernstein R. and Clark Silberman S., Generation Q, Gays, Lesbians, and Bisexuals, Born Around 1969, Stonewall Riots, Tell Their Stories of Growing Up in the Age of Information, Los Angeles, Allison. Please email me if you want to read my work and have trouble accessing it. I can send it to you. P.S. The rest of this zine is made up of the timeline, which I have typed up as it is, in the order in which it was written, and edited only to clarify acronyms, to protect privacy, and to anglicise US-centric spelling and grammar. And below this is another photograph, which is a panorama picture of the workshop at No Lose. So there are lots of people in this picture. In the foreground, there are three people with their back to the camera, sitting. One person is sitting in a wheelchair. To the right of the picture, there's a chair. There are just so many people in this picture. And to the left of the picture, you can see people writing on the timeline on the wall and discussing it. Okay, so I'm going to read out a queer and trans fat activist timeline now. So I've done the explanatory little essay, and now this is the queer and trans fat activist timeline itself. 1967. The Fat-In takes place in Central Park, New York. 1969. NAFA's constitution and bylaws are signed. NAFA, the National Association to Aid Fat Americans, later renamed the National Association to Advance Fat Acceptance. 1969 still. Girth and Mirth San Francisco formed. Rolling Quads in Berkeley leads to birth of independent living movement. 1970. Llewellyn Louderback publishes Fat Power, cited by the Fat Underground as an influence. 1972. The Fat Underground begins as a group at the Radical Psychiatry Center in Berkeley. 1973. The Fat Underground establishes a chapter or a local group of NAFA in Los Angeles. Later they leave and strike out as an independent organization. 1974. The Fat Underground eulogize Mama Cass Elliot at a Women's Equality Day in Los Angeles. 1976 to 1979. Fat activists from Minneapolis bring TP to Michigan Women's Music Festival for Fat Outreach, was in disability area. Judith Stein, Boston, brought Fat Underground info, included Iowa City Dykes, Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, 1977. Fat activists in Midwest getting together for meeting, in brackets, 1979. 1978, Judy Free Spirit moves to Sonoma County and starts new movement. 1978 to 1979, small anti-dieting group of dykes in the Castro of San Francisco, California, became a landing place for Fat Underground ideology. 1978 or 9 to 1982, Fat Chance. 1979, Fat Show on radio show on Fat, WORT, Madison. Early 80s, Cynthia, ? Starts making big pants for Michigan Women's Music Festival, becomes making it big. 80s to 2000, ? Fat Swim, Richmond Plunge, Jan Marino makes swimsuits for everyone. 1980, Maxi Mermaids, Fat Swim at Richmond Plunge. Fat activists working meetings with Judith Stein and others in Boston. Fativity, ? Fat women on low flying trapeze. 1981, Fat Lip forms. 1982, Fat Lip performs first Reader Theatre. Seattle Fat Women's Calendar. 1983, Lisa Schoenfielder and Barb Weezer published the anthology Shadow on a Tightrope, Writings by Women on Fat Oppression. Rianne Fagan, a core member of the Fat Underground, dies of breast cancer. The New Haven Fat Liberation Front begin. Fat Lip on Phil Donahue. 1983 to 1989. We Dance, Deb Burgard's dance class in Oakland, exclusively for women over 200 pounds, which will become the basis for some of the Great Shape book. I had to overcome my hesitation to do the class out of fear that I was not fat enough. 1984. Common Lives / Lesbian Lives, number 12, photo album published includes Fat Frolics photos by Leslie Baker. Radiance Magazine. Radiance Retreat. Deb teaches We Dance Workshop. Fat Health and Liberation discussed in new edition of Our Bodies Ourselves, thanks in part to Judith Stein. 1985. Nancy Barron, PhD, Portland. Ample Opportunity publishes Ample Information. 1986, C.M. Donald publishes a book of poems, The Fat Woman Measures Up. 1986 to 1987, robust and rowdy potluck dances in Oakland, California. 1987, Kathy Kaye publishes a lesbian photo album, includes photos and text about Judy Free Spirit, Fat Chance, and Fat Lip Readers Theatre. Elina Dykeman publishes The Real Fat Woman Poems in Sinister Wisdom No. 33. Heresies, a publication of art and feminism, publishes issue Food is a Feminist Issue. Nothing to Lose, Fat Lip Video Done. 1988, Pat Lyons and Deb Burgard publish Great Shape, the first fitness guide for large women in hardback. 1989, Heather Smith publishes an account of the Fat Women's Conference in London, creating a politics of appearance in the journal Trouble and Strife, which also includes the Fat Dyke statement. Let It All Hang Out, in brackets, Liaho, number one. Fat Dyke rally / dance party at Harvey Milk Plaza, Castro, San Francisco, California. 1990, Pat Lyons and Deb Burgard publish Great Shape, the first fitness guide for large women in paperback. Liaho number 2. 1991, Liaho number 3. Pod's bulletin board creates online community, in brackets, migrates to Usenet. Now You See Me, performance about lack of fat actors as form of censorship, in brackets, Rhode Island. 1992, Fat Dyke float number 1 in San Francisco Gay Day Parade. 1992 to 1994, Fat Women's Group meets in London. 1993, Susan Stinson publishes a chapbook of poems, Belly Songs, in celebration of fat women. Hot Lip, in brackets, Fat Lip Sex Script. Fatso, zine started by Marilyn Wan. Fat Feminist Caucus of NAFA held annual conferences in Connecticut in this period, early 90s. 1993 to 1996, Nomi Lam publishes her zine I'm So Fucking Beautiful. Fat is a Lesbian Issue, precursor to No Lose. 1994, Laurie Toby Edison and Debbie Notkin publish Women on Large, Images of Fat Nudes. Susan Stinson publishes Fat Girl Dances with Rocks. 1994 to 1997, Fat Girl is published. In brackets, Fat Girl Online garners interviews, panels, TV coverage. 1995, Fat Dyke float number 2. 1996, Dirty Bird Queercore Festival in San Francisco hosts a fat activist workshop. Pretty Porky and Pissed Off stage their first activist event in Toronto. Susan Stinson publishes a novel, Martha Moody. The Callan Lord Center, in brackets, LGBT Health Clinic in New York City, gets armless chairs in all waiting areas after letter of complaint by Jelani Fontaine. Deb Burgard starts bodypositive.com. 1997. Fat photo of Harvest Brown on cover of Lesbian Connection causes huge, in brackets, plus minus, response. Venus Group formed, Ypsilanti, Michigan. Lisa Teeler and Dana Schuster open Women of Substance Health Spa, registered trademark, in Redwood City, California. Question mark. When exact dates? Question mark. AHELP, Association for the Health Enrichment of Large People, holds 3 conferences before imploding. First organized national gathering of what will become Health at Every Size practitioners. At one of these conferences, Marilyn Wan's famous challenge to Hirschman and Munter describing mouth hunger versus stomach hunger, comparing this to Freud deciding vaginal orgasms were legitimate, but clitoral orgasms were not. 1998. Charlotte Cooper, that's me, publishes Fat and Proud, The Politics of Size. Deb Burgard starts Health at Every Size Web Bring. Marilyn Wan publishes Fatso, the book. Diesel Femwear founded. 1998 to 1999. Discussions about health at any size versus health at every size. 1999. National Organization of Lesbians of Size Everywhere. Sarah Doherty makes protest posters in response to a New Year's resolutions bulletin board at a dorm in Cornell University that has the resolution, I resolve to lose weight. On the poster, Sarah writes, rolls are beautiful, and I resolve to take up space, and plasters the campus with them. Millennium Fat Dyke Dinner Dance, Oakland, California. Heather McAllister gives a Fat and Queer 101 workshop at the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force's Creating Change to a largely hostile queer audience, and she and Sarah Doherty exchange emails. When was the first year? Pat Lyons hosts San Francisco Bay Area meetings of therapists, activists, artists, etc. Still happening 3 to 4 times per year as the think tank in 2010. 2000. Hannah Blank publishes Big Big Love, a sourcebook on sex for people of size. No Lose, Kingston, New York. Sondra Solovey publishes Tipping the Scales of Justice, Fighting Weight-Based Discrimination. Susan Stinson publishes Speak Out Against Fat Hatred in Healthy Weight Journal, an account of her community's response to fat hatred. This was also a 100-plus person rally in Northampton, Massachusetts. Marina Wolf, Big Moves, offers first size-inclusive dance contest in Oakland, California. Fat Fly Girls, Fat Hip-Hop Troupe, Come Out of Class, Marina Wolf offered. Cheryl Hayworth features Women's Guerrilla History Project, San Francisco. Lesbian Avengers of Boston have a Fat Dykes Eat Out picnics in public and half-naked swims. Then they publish a zine about fat queer stuff, in brackets, especially Sarah Doherty and Amy Mendoza. 2001, Good Vibes releases Voluptuous Vixens. No Lose, Parsippany, New Jersey. Fat Bottom Review forms in San Francisco, California. Janet Evans Brazil and Katie Lobesco publish Bodies Out of Bounds, Fatness and Transgression. Fat Camp, Youth Support and Fat Positivity. Which year? 24-hour fitness, billboard, when the alien comes, they'll eat the fat ones first. Marilyn responds with, eat me. Demo leads to Tom Amiano initiating adding height and weight to San Francisco's anti-discrimination policy. Deb Burgard starts Show Me the Data listserv to connect people all over the world who want to dissect the research, also to allow people who met through AHELP to continue communicating. 2002. Love Your Body Now, Brooklyn, demonstration when borough president put Brooklyn on a diet, dancing and yay station, Becca Wydham. Fat Follies, play written by Judy Freespirit and performed in Oakland, California. Still on 2002. Performance art Amanda Piasecki, published San Francisco Chronicle. First Fat Positive Discrimination, in brackets Jazzercise, Case Demo, International No Diet Day, Jennifer Portnick, You Don't Need to Look Leaner Than the Public to Teach, Sondra Solovey, attorney. Planned and Executed Targeted Diet Center Vandalism and Art, Ann Arbor, Michigan. Chainsaw Chubbets formed. 2003, No Lose, Mount Laurel, New Jersey. The Chubbses are born. Julie Wyman makes Buoyant, film for Master of Fine Arts project about padded lilies. Glenn performance open mic at No Lose. Fat Girl, Frock Swap. Chunky Dunk Swim. First Fat Girl Speaks, Portland, Oregon. Cupcake Dance Party, Portland, Oregon. Iron Maiden's Fat Installation, Mills College, Amanda Piasecki. First Fat Feminist Conference in San Francisco, hosted by the Feminist Caucus of NAFA. Deb Burgard and Ellen Schumann start Health at Every Size Special Interest Group within the Academy for Eating Disorders, leads to guidelines in 2009. 2004, Amanda Piasecki starts Fatchinista. Kathleen Lobesco publishes Revolting Bodies, The Struggle to Redefine Fat Identity. No Lose, Mount Laurel, New Jersey. Susan Stinson publishes a novel, Venus of Chalk. The Chubsters at No Lose. In brackets, Fat, Transgender, Disabled, Queer Bodies event, in brackets, May, Philadelphia. Glenn Marler comes out at Gigolo, evening of Fat performance, Brooklyn, New York. Philadelphia Drag Kings perform All Fat, Fat Positive Number at the Great Big International Drag Show, Washington, D.C. Big Moves, Boston begins. 2004, 2005. Popular Culture Association starts Fat Studies area somewhere around now. 2005. Max Airborne and Cherry Midnight publish Size Queen zine. No Lose, Newark, New Jersey. Pretty Porky and Pissed Off retire. Heather McAllister at Cornell University. Heart. Fat Femme Mafia is founded. December. Super Galore benefit. 2006. No Lose, Menlo Mountain Retreat, Phoenicia, New York. Fat Femme Mafia Chub Rub, A Fat Cabaret, Toronto. Scarlett O'Claire becomes first fat centrefold in Slit, Sydney. Association for Size, Diversity and Health, first conference in Cincinnati, Ohio, continuing to 2010. Fat and the Academy Conference, organised by Size Matters at Smith College, Northampton, Massachusetts. Hart, Menla, Stephanie Snyder, Sarah Doherty, Hart. 2007. Fat Girl Flea. Heather McAllister dies, Hart, of ovarian cancer. Lucas Black makes Fat Femme Mafia in Trinity Bellwoods Park. Chunky Dunk Toronto, in brackets Fat Femme Mafia. Plus Size Clothing Sale Toronto, in brackets can't remember name. Bodies of Evidence Conference at Cambridge University, UK, organised by Shirlene Badger. Oakland Fat Medical Advocacy Group, Amanda Piasecki. Speakers included Matilda St. John, Elena Escaliera, response to Heather McAllister dying, in brackets. Fat Girl Speaks, Portland, Oregon. Mayor of San Francisco declares 25th February 2007 Heather McAllister Day. Supersized supermodel Kelly Dreen Jinkwater is featured in ID Magazine, London. 2008. Erin Remick releases Fat Dynasty, Episode 1. No Lose, Northampton, Massachusetts. Tara Shuai publishes A Different Kind of Fat Rant, People of Color and the Fat Acceptance Movement. Redress opens in New York City. Amanda Green starts Fat Positive Charlottesville, Charlottesville, Virginia. FAQ, in brackets Fat and Queer, New York City. Linda Bacon publishes Health at Every Size. Femcast, Queer Fat Femmes Guide to Life podcast. Association for Women in Psychology begins Size Acceptance Caucus. Hairspray on Broadway. Kelly Jean Drinkwater is cover girl of Slit magazine, Sydney. Leonard Nimoy publishes Full Body Project in book form. NoHo Art Gallery full of fatties and allies for release. Queer Workshop at NAFA, in brackets Sarah Doherty, Stephanie Snyder, Leslie Owens. NAFA Los Angeles shows up at the No Lose mailing party at Sarah and Stephanie's place. Awesome straight and queer ally moment. 2009. Alison Mitchell opens her sculpture show, Ladies Sasquatch. Karina Tomley and Anne Koloski-Naylor publish Fat Studies in the UK. Erin Remick releases Fat Dynasty, Episode 2. The Chubsters invade the British Film Institute for the London Lesbian and Gay Film Festival. The Chubsters host a gang meeting in Hamburg. Esther Rothblum and Sandra Solovey publish The Fat Studies Reader. Fat Girl Flea, New York City and San Francisco. Fat Fancy Open Storefront from Garage Event, Portland, Oregon. Fat Femme Front starts meeting Sydney, Australia. Diva Magazine has Fat Issue, Kelly Jean Drinkwater and Be Sweet on cover. Academy for Eating Disorders Guidelines for Childhood Obesity Prevention Program passed. Rosie O'Donnell posts link to Lucas Black's Fat Femme Mafia film. Fat Radical Cheerleading Flash Mob at Red Rattler, Sydney. 1 August, NAFA and ASDA lobby in Washington, D.C. for fat rights. Cupcakes and Muffin Tops event, fat event for No Lose and Big Moves. Linda Bacon does keynote on Thin Privilege. Flesh Mob on the steps of Philadelphia Museum of Art. Eileen Rosensteel performs the Amazing Fat Lady Show in Madison, Wisconsin. Aquaporco forms Sydney, the Fat Femme synchronized swim team. The Fat of the Land, a Queer Chub Harvest Festival, takes place in London. 2010, Charlotte Cooper premieres her film Lovely and Slim in London. No Lose, Oakland, California. Fat Femme Mafia changes name to Big Appetite. Bertha Pearl and Stephanie Snyder, bigger art show at Q Center, Portland, Oregon. Alison Mitchell performs tribute to Mama Cass for Inside Out Film Festival, Toronto. Heavy impact on MTV's America's Best Dance Crew. Fatcast podcast. Documentary Fierce Fat Femmes goes into production, directed by Kelly Jean Drinkwater. A few days after the workshop, Luscious dies suddenly. This scene is dedicated to her. Underneath that, there's another panorama photograph of the timeline unfurled on the floor of the room at Villa Magdalena K, where I made this scene. This timeline was constructed at a workshop called The Time of Our Lives, Fighting Fat Panic Through Fat History, Memory and Culture. The workshop was facilitated by Charlotte Cooper and Kay Hyatt at No Lose, Oakland, California, on Friday, 4th of June, 2010. The following people contributed to the workshop and timeline: Lillian Berendt, Stacey Bias, Deb Burgard, Miriam Cantor, Charlotte Cooper, Goldie Dartmouth, Sarah Doherty, Kelly Jean Drinkwater, Elana Dykeman, Jelani Fontaine, Lynn Gerber, Susan Goldberg, Kay Hyatt, Maura Kelly, Katie Lebesco, Chelsea Lichterwoman, Simi Litvak, Zoe Melio-Irwin, Myasia, Elizabeth Miller, Nicolina Moisik, Christina Nygaard, Scarlett O'Claire, Amanda Piasecki, Deborah Pollock, Nat Pyle, Eileen Rosensteel, Esther Rothblum, Stephanie Snyder, Carol Squires, Nancy Thomas, Tracy Tidwell, and many more who did not give their names. An audio version of this zine is available. Please contact mail@charlottecooper.net for a copy. A queer and trans fat activist timeline by Charlotte Cooper is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. This means you can copy, download and share this zine with others as long as they credit me, Charlotte Cooper, but they can't change the zine in any way or use it commercially. Permissions beyond the scope of this license, for example translations, may be available at http://www.obesitytimebomb.blogspot.com. To view a copy of this license, visit http://creativecommons.org/licenses/by-nc-nd/3.0/, or send a letter to Creative Commons, 171 2nd Street, Suite 300, San Francisco, California, 94105, USA. This zine was printed by Footprint Workers Cooperative, www.footprinters.co.uk. On the back cover of the zine is the poem that somebody wrote at the end of the timeline that initially irritated me, but now I've come to appreciate it. Goes like this: Fatlandia, a place, a space for face-to-face, belonging for people of all sizes, big diverse chairs, no stairs, slash stairs, everyone cares. Okay, that's it. Thanks for listening. Bye.